Majority Report with Sam Cedar, where every day's casual Friday. That means Monday is casual Monday, Tuesday, casual Tuesday, Wednesday, casual hump day, Thursday, casual Thurs, that's what we call it, and Friday, casual Shabbat. The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
It is Friday, March 24th, 2017. My name is Sam Cedar. This is the four-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. It's Casual Friday, folks. But can we ever be casual in the era of Trump? I don't know. I guess it's really just a function of how much alcohol you're consuming. Or cheese. Or cookies.
Cheese?
I don't know. Whatever.
Jesus.
Well, there you go.
Very snivelly little Jewel getting his cheese.
On the program today, to look back at this week that feels like it was 6 months long, the great Digby, Heather Parton from the blog Hullabaloo, will be joining us. Also on the program today, to give us a streaming movie suggestion for the weekend, Isabel Gillies will join us to much applause. Meanwhile, House vote. Will it happen today? Will the Ryan Care, Trump Care bill pass? Does it matter if it passes in the House? Is it possible that it's actually gotten much worse in the past 24 hours? Yes. Also, President Trump, with the head of TransCanada in his office, approves the Keystone Pipeline, sending pride through those who voted for the one candidate that had a green energy program. Also on the program today, Adam Schiff, not the only one attacking Devin Nunes, as Nunes cancels an upcoming public hearing by the House Intel Committee, and the Washington Post calls for his investigation over whatever it was that he told the Trump administration. Meanwhile, victims of Neil Gorsuch's rulings have their moment to speak in front of the Senate. And we have finally tracked down a perpetrator of voter fraud. And here's a hint. He's not an undocumented immigrant.
Very hard to catch us, man.
But he is a Republican official. Also on the program, the Senate votes to allow internet providers to spy on you, everything you do online or watch TV, all of it. All of it. And, the good news is, you remember when everybody was deleting their Uber accounts? And we thought, 200,000 people had deleted their Uber's accounts?
Yeah, go ahead.
Turns out, 500,000.
Oh, that's beautiful. It was so satisfying to be one of those people.
What's interesting here is the reason why I mentioned this Uber thing, in addition to being quite happy about it. And in New York, anyways, what I use is Juno. But first, I use Curb. So Juno is my backup. Curb is my go-to. Curb, you get the taxis. And the thing that's great about Curb is you can also just get into a taxi. I don't take cars that often, one way or another, but you can just jump into a taxi and then pair it up while you're there. So you get that feature of, not having to have money on you or whatnot. And it's good for Mila.
You take cars when you go to your fancy Hayes job with your makeup and your hairdo.
I don't pay for those cars.
I know.
They send because they want to make sure you get there on time.
I take the car services.
Oh, well, that's...
They hire felons. I feel like...
Are you saying that as a way of promoting the car service? Or is there a particular car service? What's the best car service someone can choose if they want to have felons? Are they active felons?
I'm not going to say that.
Oh, okay.
Are they active felons? Are they committing felonies currently?
The guy that Joey hires are fucking great. It's completely unfair. Don't besmirch them. It's a great fucking car service.
Look.
They have been in jail for felonies. I've talked to some of them about it, and they felt like it's given them a second chance.
Good.
I feel pretty good about it. Hope I don't get killed or anything like that.
Well, but there's no reason to think that you're going to get killed.
I don't.
You know what? I look forward to hopping
in. More than somebody who's going to...
Yeah, I feel like an Uber.
Well, I think Uber has the most dangerous track record, I believe. I look forward to one day jumping in a car in the not-too-distant future, getting in there, looking at the driver, and him being like, "Good day. My name's Sebastian Gorka. Where can I take you?"
I don't think that's ever. I think he's going to have a nice long sinecure. Is that what they call it in the right wing world? I mean, I guess he'll just move.
There's no such thing as failure in Republican politics.
Exactly.
This is true. Being a fraud and a criminal can only help you progress forward.
Far more likely would be just imagine a YouTube in the future that is, "Well, libtards, now I'm going to shoot this machine gun into this pile of sand."
Do you like that?
You guys run around for Captain,
I don't remember that guy's
Chief
name.
Kessler.
Kessler, he was amazing.
Oh, poor Matt.
Yeah, you would like that.
Oh, you would have liked that guy.
"First, I'm going to unload an ammo round into this hill, and then me and Dave Rubin are going to sit down for a free and open exchange of ideas. Oh, I will never be stopped."
But, all right, my point about the Uber thing, I have never been a fan of Uber, and it wasn't... a lot of it had to do with, they're coming in, they're attacking regulatory structures in some cities without a legitimate approach in my mind. They, I think to a certain extent, bait and switched their drivers. And I don't think their employment practices are very good. The idea that, and it's a perfectly legitimate, I guess maybe this isn't a good analogy for people who feel this way, but I'm glad that 500,000 people, let me put it this way. There was a lot of people who deleted their Uber accounts who would have never done it from a labor perspective, from a labor critique. Now, it just so happens that the reason why they deleted these things was also for an extremely legitimate reason. But from a labor perspective, I'm very happy to see Uber kneecapped. Maybe it wasn't, but from a labor perspective, I'm very happy. So I'm going to take that. By the same token, and I think, a lot of people who, we were never really too concerned about Russia encroaching in our democracy as a grave threat or it being the reason why Clinton lost. But those people who argue that it's not worth pursuing at all or that it's silly, I think part of the reason, if this law goes down, if this vote does not go the way that Trump wants it to, part of the reason is because of the undercutting of his legitimacy and the weakening of his popularity as a function of these questions surrounding him and the ongoing investigation with the FBI. Even if Comey had not come out at the beginning of the week and said, "We're investigating him," this still, obviously, the guy's approval ratings are hovering around 40. And some instances, I think, you know, some of these Freedom Caucus people in particular, and some on the other sort of end of the spectrum, where Clinton may have won in their district, and guys like, you know, like a Daryl Issa, for instance, it makes them feel like, it, you know, I've got to make a decision here. And I don't, you know, being with Trump does not have the value it might be if he's at 60% or 55% approval, even 50% approval rating. So people have to, like I say, chew gum and walk at the same time, and don't spit out the gum, because the gum has some value.
Okay.
In the
can I just add really
also
briefly
littering.
Too?
And it's littering.
I think
you could spit it out and put it in a garbage can.
I think that that we've also talked about too is that what's great about the Russia process is maybe they'll flip when the numbers continue to sink, but it's really also revealing the Republicans. And there's a great intrinsic value in that.
We saw that revelation. I mean, I don't know if even people are even seeing that, frankly. I mean, you know, look, are you aware, any of you, or you, there's a 1924 law, apparently, that was written, I think had to do with Mellon, I think it was, where the House can compel the release of Donald Trump's taxes and even make them public. There has now been two or three votes, I think, or attempts to vote by Democrats to get the release of Donald Trump's taxes, which, of course, you know, I don't know if it would resolve stuff, but it certainly would make things a little bit clearer, right? And Republicans have shut it down repeatedly. Devin Nunes went to Paul Ryan before he went to the White House with whatever information it is. And we'll talk more about this with Digby. But, I mean, these are, you know, and we'll see. We'll see what happens. We'll talk to Digby about this because we can and I want to. Folks, just a reminder, it is your memberships that make this show possible. If you have the financial means, please become a member at jointhemajorityreport.com. And as a way of saying thank you, we give you an extra hour or so more of programming every day. And again, if you're one of those people who don't have the financial means to do so, but you want the extra hour plus of content every day, happy to help you out. Send us an email at majorityreporters@gmail.com. All right, going to take a quick break. We'll be right back after this. We are back, Sam Seder on The Majority Report. It is always a pleasure to welcome my next guest to this program, the proprietor of the Uber blog, Hullabaloo, and also a daily columnist at Salon, Digby or Heather Parton. Hello, Heather.
Hi, Sam. How are you?
Well, I mean, as we were saying at the break, when I rang you up, I'm exhausted and I'm fed up.
No kidding. I mean, this is just the sheer pace of this. I think, I mean, I'm wondering if Donald Trump is going to, you know, succeed just by driving everyone to sheer exhaustion. I don't know how we can keep up with it. It's an amazing thing. I wrote a piece for Salon this morning in which, I mean, this struck me as one of the most surreal weeks in American politics, culminating with Trump yesterday getting in the front seat of a semi like a three-year-old. And pretending to drive it. I mean, that's where we are now. I mean, this is how bizarre things are getting.
I thought that was apt because what I took from that picture is he was imagining as if he was driving the country off a cliff. I mean, there's really a quality of him. There's sort of like that Thelma and Louise quality to the expression on his face, where he's grabbing the steering wheel and just like, because I know. I know at least I have a fairly good friend who is a truck driver, and he doesn't make that face when he drives.
No,
I mean
no. Normal truck drivers don't do that. 3-year-olds do that, or Thelma and Louise.
Right,
do that.
unless like I think that's like the face you make if you are ramming your 18-wheeler into a tanker that happens to be in front of you on the highway full of explosive stuff. I mean, it's really, that was more of a, I mean, I've been saying with Trump that it really does feel like a race. Either he's going to have a heart attack or the rest of the country is going to have a heart attack. And we'll find out. I mean, who wins. But in the meantime, we have, I think, if this was a normal time, 5 major stories. We won't get to the approval of the Keystone Pipeline today, or the Senate rolling back internet privacy and what's going on with the EPA.
Well, how about legalizing shooting bear cubs as their mothers are hibernating in the cave.
Gosh.
They actually legalized that. Yeah.
To be fair, there was we heard a lot of that on the campaign. That was a big part of making America great again.
He's just fulfilling his promises. That's true.
So let's start with what I think by the end of the day, I think by the end of the day, might be the end of the week drama going backwards, but it's who knows. By at midnight tonight, Devin Nunes could be walking into the White House and blowing the cover of undercover agents. But so tonight, supposedly this afternoon, the House will vote on Trump Care, Ryan Care. This has been, it's really fascinating how much of a train wreck this has been. If they manage to pull out the vote, it seems to me, which will be really no great shakes. I mean, 3 weeks ago, I didn't know anybody who didn't think this wouldn't pass the House, right? I remember it was like, it's going to pass the House, but it'll die in the Senate. And if they pull it off, I think you're going to hear a lot of like, he's a genius.
Oh yeah,
and the bill's never going to go anywhere. But I mean, just your reaction to what you've seen this week.
Well, I mean, let me just preface what I'm about to say by saying that let's talk about what the smart move would have been for the Republicans and Donald Trump. You know, Trump made a lot of promises. The Republicans running made a lot of promises. They were going to repeal it and they were going to replace it. Obamacare with something much better, right, and freer and with a lot more liberty and a lot more choice. you know, Obama passed that bill. It's called the Affordable Care Act, and that is the Republican bill. And I don't say that in a pejorative way. I'm just saying that's the way that, you know, you would do it if you were doing a privatized health care program. And so that would guarantee all these things that Americans want and need and keep costs in line, et cetera, et cetera. So, you know, that bill already exists. And the smart move would have been for Republicans to make a big show. We're repealing this completely in its entirety. This abomination is going away. And then replace it with exactly the same bill. Tweak a couple little things, do some tort reforms, you know, do the state lines or some things around the edges. Call it Trump Care, declare victory, and go home. They should have kept the same bill and just relabeled it, you know, rebranded it. Isn't that what Trump is, you know, allegedly,
right.
You know, the branding king? And then everybody would have gotten what they wanted, and, you know, everyone would have still have health care that actually makes sense, and maybe they could get to work on trying to fix the very real problems that exist in the Affordable Care Act or Trump Care or whatever you want to call it, and try and get this thing actually working. That's how responsible people would have done this, knowing that there was nothing better in a privatized health care system that they could come up with. Instead, what we have is they actually have decided to, you know, go back to the way it was before the Affordable Care Act and make it even worse. So that is their solution to this. So this is the problem that we're in. Now, there are actual human beings involved, and they actually are going to suffer by what they're doing. But that's where we are, and the politics of this are absolutely fascinating. I hate to look at this as an abstraction because I'm a person who's actually going to be affected by this. I'm one of those, you know, those older people who are going to use Obamacare. And are going to, you know, see my premium skyrocket if this thing happens. So this is a very real thing to me. But as a political observer, you cannot help but look at this and go, oh, my God, what in the world has happened here? And, so here we are at the end of the week.
I mean, it seems to me, and maybe it's too early to do sort of one of these retrospectives, but if I remember the sort of the sequencing correctly, what happened was, you know, Donald Trump, well, you start with the idea that Donald Trump was attacking the Affordable Care Act from the left. And like you say, like their response to it is to dismantle it from the right. And there's really no room to do that.
Right.
But they had been attacking it. He had been attacking it from the left, right? It's too expensive. You're not getting enough access or care or whatever it was. And it seemed to me for the first couple of weeks of the administration, it sounded like what Paul Ryan wanted to do, because they realized they had this problem. Like, we already passed the repeal and replace. Mm-hmm. And in 2015,
well, the repeal anyway.
Well, no, they had passed the repeal and replace in 2015. It's just that Barack Obama vetoed it. It had gone through both the House and the Senate. They had done it through reconciliation. Obama vetoed it in 2015. So the bill was there. They didn't have to write a single word. They had it. But they also knew that nobody, you know, they didn't really buy into it. And it seems to me that their plan was, we're going to repeal and punt. And we're going to say that it's repealed so that we get the taxes and we get the tax cuts. And none of the stuff starts falling apart until 2018, 2019, 2020.
Right.
And then I remember that week. That was like, you know, Paul Ryan said this on a Monday. And on Wednesday, Donald Trump got out there and said, we're going to do repeal and replace at the same time. I mean, it may not happen. It may happen like in a couple of days after we repeal it. Maybe it's in the same hour. Maybe just immediately right then. But that's the way we're going to do it. And then the next day, Paul Ryan is like, yeah, that's the way we're going to do it. And meanwhile, throughout this entire period, you have this mobilization of people going to town halls and scaring the heck out of Republican lawmakers, giving them a lot less latitude. And then simultaneously, you have this assault on Donald Trump, his legitimacy from these investigations, and all that adds up into like they can't rally around anything. It's fascinating, and I it's conceivable to me, I guess, that they could pass it out of the House still. I mean, I don't think so, but
yeah, I don't know, but. Well, I mean, let's look at, I mean, Paul Ryan and, you know, you came into this. Keep in mind that before the election, Paul Ryan was, you know, among conservative movement activists and from a lot of people on the right. His name was Mudd. I mean, he was not a popular figure. And a lot of it, you know, all these Freedom Caucus, Tea Party types felt that Paul Ryan had really let them down, that he was, you know, and let's be honest, when he even took the speakership, after John Boehner resigned, you know, that was kind of nip and tuck too. He had to make a lot of promises to the right wing of his party. Then they were skeptical of him, so he was lacking credibility in that group to begin with. And then, you know, along comes Trump, and they kind of papered that over going into this session of Congress, but. That dynamic still exists underneath all this. At the same time as what you said, that Trump doesn't have a whole lot of credibility at the moment either. It's going to be very hard for people to vote for a plan that has a 17% approval rating in the country.
Right.
And Donald Trump, who is, you know, seems to be becoming mired under 40% at the moment. And he, in other words, he's not going up. He seems to be ticking down. So they have a problem there. And what you're seeing is, you know, Donald Trump will never take responsibility for anything ever in his life. He has never apologized for anything. He refuses to admit he's ever been wrong. I mean, this is an absolute reality with this guy. So the idea that he would back off or give someone else credit or whatever, everything with him is about blame. So he's positioning himself to blame Ryan for whatever happens. Ryan, in the meantime, has lashed himself to Trump. He's out there calling him the ultimate closer, that this guy, you know, hit the cover off the baseball. You know, he's been absolutely, you know, say, this is all about him. Trump is the guy who's in there negotiating. He's, you know, completely wrapped himself around Trump and wrapped the bill around Trump so that Trump no longer has any room, really, to credibly distance himself from it. He's been in there in the trenches actually negotiating. Now, Trump will try, and he will say that it had nothing to do with him if the bill fails. And he'll say it had nothing to do with him if the bill succeeds and then becomes law and does, you know, wreaks the havoc that we know it will wreak. That will not be his fault either, because he never takes responsibility for anything. So the politics of that are really interesting, because, you know, who's really going to win here? I, you know, there's no winning in this. I think even on their by their own standards, maybe the Freedom Caucus, maybe they consider themselves having won if they can destroy all insurance regulations. I mean, maybe that's really their reason for doing this. But other than that, this is a very, very ugly, ugly hot potato. And I assume they just wanted to get it voted on, get it out of the House, and, you know, throw it over to the Senate and let them kill it. But at this point, it looks like they're actually trying to, you know, they're having a problem even just getting rid of it. It may just be sitting there in, you know, this fetid, horrible, toxic bill sitting there in the House, kind of poisoning everything.
Yeah, I mean, just to give people a sense of sort of like how this is working, I guess Gabe Sherman in New York Magazine has said that Steve Bannon is saying that the AHCA, the Ryan Care, was written essentially by the healthcare industry. I mean, so there's a lot of there's a lot of different sort of, I guess, cross currents here that are, and you know, and for a guy like Bannon, right? Like, this is not necessarily bad. I think he, you know, his whole agenda is to just deconstruct the administrative state. So
yep.
Any type of chaos like this is probably a good thing in his mind. He's just waiting for the excuse to have World War III. And I'm saying that literally.
Yeah, I agree.
I mean, I'm not saying he's looking for this metaphorically. I think he really is just waiting, like praying that there'll be some something that will trigger the coming sort of near apocalypse. So that's where we are on this vote. I mean, let me ask you this. I mean, Trump has said, this is it. We're going to vote. And then if you don't vote for it, I'm moving on. I think that's actually going to be more successful than we broadly would imagine. I don't think it's going to be successful, a net positive, but I think he's going to be able to move on. I can't even remember what happened last week, frankly. And he's going to be doing such a bad crap, crazy thing. You know, next thing up, we have this horrible budget. And I don't think that his voters are going to punish him very much either. I think the irony is that you know, it's just going to help a little bit with this media narrative, but they're always looking to redeem a guy like Trump. So if he manages to, I don't know, sign off on Keystone, I guess he did that today. They're going to say, "Wow, he's the comeback kid." At that point.
I mean, well, I think that's true. I mean, look, Trump has been saying since he got into office. Now, yeah, when he was on the road running, he was always saying, you know, we're going to make it better. Here's a quote I've got in front of me. I'm going to take care of everybody. I don't care if it costs me votes or not. Everybody's going to be taken care of much better than they're taken care of now. That was his promise. It's going to be better, much, much better. Since he got in office, though, he's been saying, and he said it explicitly a number of times, we would be better off politically to leave Obamacare in place and let it fail so we can blame the Democrats. I mean, he says this out loud. Yeah. That's how much of a political clod he is. But, you know, he says that. And, you know, you can see why that makes sense for him. He doesn't have to run for office again for 4 years. He can hammer Obama, and his people love it, right? He can go out to his rallies in red states, and everybody will cheer when he talks about beating up Obama and how terrible Obamacare is and blah, blah, blah. And that might work for him. Now, the people in the House have to run in 2018, and a bunch of senators do too, and they have a different problem there, right? I mean, they made some other promises that they're going to be held accountable for long before Trump. But, you know, that's what he wants to do. He wants to walk away from this. He doesn't care about health care. He doesn't understand it. To him, it was just something that somebody told him everybody was talking about on talk radio, and he made a big deal out of it. But, I mean, this isn't one of his issues. I mean, he doesn't care.
Right.
So he just wants to walk away from it. And I agree with you. I think that could really work for him. Now, you know, he also has Tom Price in charge of, administering Obamacare, and his directive will be to sabotage it at every at every point that he can. And that's going to be very problematic for people in the states and other places. You know, I live in California, and we have strong insurance commissioners and various laws and things that will probably not allow, the sort of degradation of the program the way that it will be degraded in places like Arkansas or Mississippi. And that's really a shame. Those people need health care too. But that's where the action will be, in the executive branch administering the program. And I think that's what Trump really wants. And in a week, if this thing dies in the House, I think we will move on. Yeah. You know, it's a hot potato.
And then we'll have to deal with this budget, which I think is going to be just an incredible disaster
worse,
for the
really.
American. Yeah, it really is in many respects. But all right, well, let's move to what took place on the our president is a criminal docket side of the ledger. And yeah, right, that tiny thing. And then we'll get to the guy who's going to sit on the Supreme Court for 40 years and with an active agenda to sort of bring us back to the robber baron age. So at the beginning of the week, James Comey and Mike Rogers. Now, my understanding is this is not just the first time that James Comey has said this in public, and he was authorized to do so by the acting attorney general, who is not Jeff the acting one in the context of this specific case, because Jeff Sessions has recused himself, who's an Obama appointee. It's my understanding this is the first time that he is briefed after doing the public briefing of the Congressional Intelligence Committee. He did a private briefing. And it's my understanding it's the first time that he admitted to them even the existence of this investigation. Is that your understanding too?
That is my understanding. You recall that before that, there was a lot of bitching and moaning on the part of the committee members about how Comey wasn't being forthcoming, and this was going to be the big thing. I had assumed, though, that he had said that he had more or less admitted that that this was happening in some way or another, but apparently not. I mean, from what we understand, this really was the first time that he admitted. Well, you can understand why. When you see what happened subsequently in the week, why Comey was reluctant to give any kind of details about what they were investigating, or even that they were investigating, to the committee, because clearly the Republicans on the committee, led by the committee chairman, Devin Nunes.
Former Trump transition official.
Former Trump transition official. That, you know, he and the rest of the Republicans, I mean, Peter King as well, but, you know, a bunch of them, simply can't be trusted with this information, even though they're on the Intelligence Committee. They're clearly just acting solely as agents of President Trump. And that was made clear in the committee hearing, which was just, it was one of the most fascinating committee like this, committee hearings that I've ever seen. Because here you had this, I mean, if this pans out, if suspicions are correct, that there was coordination between the Trump members, associates of the Trump campaign, and the, agents of the Russian government, that is potentially the biggest scandal in American history. I mean, it is beyond imagining that the president of the United States, that his presidential campaign was actually coordinating with a foreign country. And yet that is the substance of the investigation, as we found out. And we had known this, so there'd been leaks to that effect, but hearing the FBI director actually say it was say that he had permission from the Justice Department to reveal that information, et cetera, that, you know, it was a very serious kind of moment. You're going, wow. The Democrats, you know, questioned the two witnesses, Rogers and Comey, the way one would expect under that kind of hearing, under the auspices of that hearing, where we're hearing that there is this investigation going on. The Republicans, on the other hand, all they could talk about were leaks. Now, these are not people who don't leak. They do leak. They leak. The Benghazi hearing was just hearings were a cacophony of leaks. That whole story was of the Benghazi and the emails and the rest was just were led by leaks for years. I mean, they went on from 2012 on. There was nothing but leaks. But suddenly they're very concerned about national
security. Devin Nunes leaked less than 24 hours after getting out of that hearing.
Exactly. Exactly. I mean, this idea that they are suddenly very, very, very concerned about the national security implication of leaking, this was all they could talk about. It was all, you know, Ms. Comey, you know, FBI Director Comey, you've got to investigate the leaks, and completely avoided this question of whether or not there was a Russian investigation. Now, you know, what that tells us is that the Republicans are, you know, they are, we're not seeing any Howard Bakers here, right? I mean, that's not happening, at least not yet. So it was a very startling kind of event. And then what happens, I was almost unbelievable to me. I mean, I couldn't believe, I was watching, you know, I was on my computer, and I've got the TV on in the background, as I usually do. And suddenly I see this thing where, you know, Devin Nunes comes out and gives a press conference saying that he's found specific information that it indicates that there really was surveillance of the Trump transition team. You know, this happened, 2 days later? On Wednesday, the hearing was on Monday. Obviously a leak, right? I mean, he's leaking that he's heard this thing about classified information.
Right.
And that he's racing to the White House to brief them on it. I mean, this is you're shaking your head going, what in the hell is going on here? And of course, that was based upon, you know, his trying to help Donald Trump cover for his 4 a.m., you know, tweet tantrum from a couple of weeks ago, where he accused the Obama accused Obama personally of wiretapping him based on some Breitbart gossip.
Let me stop you there for a moment. Let me stop you there for a moment. That's what Nunes basically, or that's based upon the information that Nunes is telling us he told.
Right.
Because I think it's quite a coincidence that the day after the first time he is briefed in closed session as to the scope and the evidence of this investigation, I think it's quite a coincidence that he then heads to the White House because he's got some other information. I mean, I think the idea that there isn't a default belief, and I haven't seen this in the news coverage at all, but the idea that there isn't a default belief that he didn't go over there to dump every bit of information he was given by James Comey into the White House, I think it's sort of shocking to me, right? Like, I mean, this is the first time he's briefed into this, and he's going over there to tell them whether or not there's ongoing. I mean, it's quite possible he went over there to say, like, look, you're still in contact with people who are being surveilled, so you have to watch what you say to them. He could have said, the Comey has X, Y, Z. They have this narrative. They have that narrative. When you are ultimately questioned by them, understand what they have, right? Because the way that Comey's going to go about this is he's going to nail people for lying to him when they finally end up having some type of sit-downs and interviews. And I think Nunes went over there and gave them everything. And the only way he could do that was to do this little kabuki theater that he has some other secret information that is really not that relevant, that is just a sidestep and whatnot. And that's why he's not showing it to anybody, because I don't even think he has it. And to the extent that he has it, it's nothing. And that was just because if I'm Nunes and I realize that the reason why James Comey is telling me this stuff today, as opposed to 3 weeks ago, because James Comey suspects that I'm going to go and help him quash the investigation, for all I know, James Comey is surveilling me. And the only one way I could go and deliver that information is to do it this way. Right? It's not like he can sneak into the back of the...
That is interesting.
I mean, I you know, this is all speculation on my part, but it's also the most reasonable explanation. Like, it would be an amazing coincidence that the day after he is read into a private briefing, that somebody else, who according to him is not the head of an agency, gave him information that was far less damaging to the president, and he delivered that information to the president. I mean, that seems like, wow, what a coincidence.
Well, that is interesting, because that explains certain aspects of this that really were kind of, you know, bizarrely inexplicable before. One is that he is refusing to share what he has, this information, with other members of the committee, even other Republicans. That's weird. I mean, they're all under the same obligation to keep this stuff secret.
Yeah.
There's no reason that he couldn't at least, you know, maybe he should even give up his source on this to the Intelligence Committee. They're also under obligation to keep that secret, but he won't do it. He's refusing all the way down the line. And all of that, I'm going, well, why? I mean, even
theoretically, this
stupid stuff
is going to end up at the committee anyways, right? I mean,
exactly. That was the whole idea. And, you know, the thing is that, I mean, even if it was innocuous, even if it was just, I mean, what people are saying, that maybe there was some intercepts, in fact, even that were maybe emails that were intercepted that mentioned the Trump transition, you know, members in it. It didn't even necessarily mean they were in on the conversation or the email, that they just came up and their names came up. And his whole thing about how, well, they weren't properly masked. Well, those emails are never properly masked. That's an ongoing issue for civil liberties advocates, that, you know, they never mask them quite as well as they should be. But whatever the case, that's the kind of thing they could show that. He could show that to Schiff and say, look, this is me really concerned and blah, blah, blah. And Schiff could go, oh, come on, it's nothing. And, you know, there's nothing in that would change Nunes' apparent motivation for being concerned about it. But the fact that he won't show it does indicate that maybe there's nothing to show. And well, that it makes you wonder, why did he have to run up to the White House? And if it's the case that he's worried that he is personally being surveilled, well, that makes perfect sense.
I mean,
that's the one place where he could talk about it.
I'm not the only person here who saw Silver Streak, right? I mean, when Richard Pryor and what's his face go Gene Wilder, they go big, right? When they go big, when they want to, and so he has no other choice. I mean, he has no other choice. If he wants to get this information to the White House, he has no other mechanism in which to do this, it seems to me, but to do what he just did. And none of it makes sense. I mean, none of it makes sense that he won't share this information now, that it's really incidental information, that the nature of the information changes, that it came from some type of secret, super secret source. I mean, none of it makes sense. Except for the fact that he knew, like, look, this could be my last chance to go over there and get them up to speed so that they know exactly where the FBI is in the investigation. And then Adam Schiff comes out an hour later and says, well, okay, I'm going to announce that we got information in that briefing yesterday that you obviously went and told the president about, that there's something more than just circumstantial evidence. I mean, it is, and I wonder if even, I mean, who, for all we know, maybe Comey didn't give him everything because he had reason to be skeptical of what Nunes was going to do. I mean, you and I have talked about my sort of, which I think is, you know, becoming clearer to me, theory that I think Comey released that Clinton letter just because he thought she was going to be president and he was going to end up indicting Donald Trump. And this is going to go to this is what I'm going to point to when we talk about I'm completely impartial. And I think it went horribly awry. I don't think the guy's terribly bright, and he was definitely breaking his own policies. But, I mean, that explanation is becoming clearer and clearer. And now I'm also starting to think that, you know, when we heard from Manafort a couple of weeks ago when he had his denials, I never knowingly spoke to someone who was a Russian agent. They don't wear badges. I'm starting to think this whole thing has been about, you know, Donald Trump is just dealing with his buddies in the Russian mafia, doing some money laundering maybe for them, which seems to be like in and out of Trump Tower. Not necessarily him, but literally people who have office space there. And one of his buddies said, like, hey, I know some hackers who can get this stuff. Oh, yeah, do it. I mean, I think when he was out there saying, like, oh, I hope the Russian government doesn't, he was laughing to himself knowing that he had hired the guys. And as far as he was concerned,
a fat guy in New Jersey.
They were just Russian mafia guys who usually do this with credit cards. Honestly, and now I think he's finding out, like, oh my God, I was talking to all these Russian agents. I mean, this is all speculation, but it would be irresponsible for us not to speculate right now.
Well, of course, and look, let's face facts here. You know, I mean, I don't have any real suspicion that Donald Trump, you know, went to Moscow and had secret meetings with Vladimir Putin and they cooked this thing up as, you know, some kind that he's an actual agent of the Russian government. I mean, I guess it's theoretically possible, but that is not where the vulnerability with Donald Trump ever lay. His problem is that he went broke in the 1990s. After his Atlantic City debacle, he went bankrupt a bunch of times and he couldn't lay his hands on money anymore. And this guy's a scammer, right? I mean, he's always kind of running on debt. He doesn't really have money, liquid money, that he can use to support his lavish lifestyle and the image that he wanted to project. So he had to get money somewhere. And where the money was in the mid 2000s, but when he was really struggling, and he's out there, you know, hawking steaks and water and, you know, a bunch of low-end consumer products, right? I mean, a billionaire doesn't really need to do that. So he was desperate. And at that point, where the money was really churning around was in this, you know, among these Russian oligarch, Russian mob you know, those circles where all that money was, and during the, you know, the petro economy, right? I mean, this is when Russia was really cooking, and they had, and this particular group of kleptocrats and oligarchs were really raking in the big bucks.
And we should remind people, his good buddy, his special advisor, literally the title was special advisor, was a guy named Felix Sater, who we now know is a was a Russian mobster, probably still is, who was being protected by the New York FBI because he was an informant. I mean, Loretta Lynch provided testimony or a letter for him when he was up on trial.
Yep.
And so, I mean, this is a guy who, you know, this is, for all we know, he's sort of like a Whitey Bulger figure for the New York FBI. There's no doubt. I mean, I think it's, I think largely speaking, to the extent that people in the Trump administration have been dealing with Russian agents, I don't think they knew this. I think they just thought they were dealing with criminals. And
and that's so much better, right?
Well, no, not necessarily. But I think that, that explanation to me makes a lot more sense than anything else, because I just don't think these people have the savvy. I think they were just in on, you know, listen, when a Russian billionaire or whomever buys an apartment for $40 million more than it's worth, the house, whatever it is, money laundering would be the first thing that this is about. It is, I'm willing to take a 25% hit on my cash because it's all stolen and I just gotta get it into circulation. So I can sell this place 3 or 4 years from now and, you know, I take a 20% hit. That's fine. That's, you know, I mean, that's what I pay.
Sure, on my cost of doing business, right?
Yeah, exactly. And yeah, exactly. You work with the Gambinos, you don't think it's Ed Koch.
Exactly. I mean, this is where, I mean, you know, you and I have talked about this a lot over the past year. You know, the astonishing fact that Donald Trump's finances were never really probed, and he became president of the United States. The fact that they remain this opaque, that his family's still making money off of this, that this is still, that he refused to divest, he refused to open the books, that he refused to release his tax returns. This whole thing is absolutely astonishing that this man is running. I mean, you know, forget the Russians. It's not just them. He's exposed all over the planet to all kinds of people. I mean, he's exposed to this guy Duterte, who's a psychopath in the Philippines, right? I mean, he's got some deals going down there, and God only knows what these people, you know, what kind of financial, you know, entanglements he has with people like that. And he's the president of the United States, and that's kind of, I mean, to me, that, you know, it's the old adage, like from all the president's men, right? I mean, it's follow the money. The money will lead us to where whatever happened with the Russians in this election, in my view, rather than, you know, this idea that somehow or another somebody was, you know, turned as a double agent or whatever. It's much more likely to me that all of this, and including Manafort, I mean, Manafort, he's obviously a key figure in all of this, and this information, I don't know if people know this, that this week there was a new revelation about Manafort, that he had signed a contract with Putin's personal oligarch. I mean, this guy is not just some guy who was in Putin's orbit. He is very, very, very close to Vladimir Putin. And he is the key oligarch in the Kremlin. And Manafort actually signed a contract with this guy to help with, what was it, publicizing democracy or something. I mean, it was and specifically to build up Putin in the U.S. and, you know, kind of enhance his image. And it's a very, very lucrative contract. This wasn't just, you know, a few thousand dollars here and there. It was many millions of dollars that were involved. And this wasn't that long ago. This was, you know, what, 2005 the contract was. It ran for God knows how long until very recently. So, you know, this, you know, it's closing in on Manafort, and what's going to happen, I think, you know, as you just pointed out, they're going to have, somebody's going to have to plead somewhere.
Right.
To, I was just being a criminal. I wasn't being a spy.
Yeah, I honestly, and I think that's true of even Manafort, frankly. I mean,
yeah, exactly.
What is clear is these are not these are not really circumspect people, right? These are not like ultra cautious. These are not people who are practicing all sorts of like tradecraft. And I mean, this is the most careless bunch of people in the world who just
two
think
words,
that they,
Roger Stone.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, these are people who are just like, I think, who, you know, clearly have an issue with organized crime figures. They operate in that world. They always feel like there's somebody they can pay off, that they can be, you know, I just think that, and Donald Trump has shown, like, he's not, I believe he didn't vet anybody. That's not hard for me to believe. I don't think he has a clue as to, like, you know, with anything that's going on around here. And
why would he have vetted members, you know, business people or members of his campaign any better than he vetted, oh, you know, the people that he's put into his cabinet?
Right.
I mean, you know, this is, he just doesn't do that. He goes, you know, as he said, and we haven't even talked about this insane interview he gave to Time Magazine, where he just said, I'm instinctual. I know how the world works. He basically said that, you know, he is completely flying by the seat of his pants and has absolutely no idea what he's doing. And, you know, that's how he's led his life.
Yep.
And, you know, don't underestimate the power of being lucky. And he is a lucky, lucky man.
Yeah.
All the way down the line, he has had luck turn his way. And it is a very powerful thing if you're someone like him. But, you know, luck does run out.
All right, look, we only have about five minutes left. And we're just now getting to Neil Gorsuch, who... I think one way or another, it is highly likely, if I had to bet, that he is going to end up on the Supreme Court.
Yeah.
But give me your sense of, and I also think he was probably the most practiced, the smoothest. I, for one, maybe I'm just projecting, but I don't think I've seen such a saccharine performance. Such a stage. My favorite was when he was telling the story that he would never forget, when he had those books in his hand and his law robe, and he walked up, and he tripped on his robe, and he introduces it as a story he would never forget, and he was literally reading it. He was reading what I just told you.
I'll never forget it here.
I'll never forget it because I always walk around with a written account of it, just in case I'm trying to prove that I'm a humble guy. But give me your sense of how the Democrats did, and how encouraged you are that they're going to filibuster.
This guy, that what you just said is absolutely. I've never seen anybody this unctuous in a hearing before. I mean, it was over the top, saccharine, sanctimonious. Ugh. You know, I don't know if he was practiced or whether or not that is the way he is, but it was really, really hard to take.
Can you imagine having to live with someone like that? I can't believe
it. It was just awful. And you know, I mean, and you could kind of see it even on the faces of the committee as they're looking at him, kind of, ooh,
yes.
You know, I mean, it's like I had a toothache as I was watching it. I mean, it was just awful. I mean, he has a personality, and maybe this is just me, but I just really found him hard to take. As for the Democrats, I mean, I was actually kind of happily surprised. They focused on something which I think is really important. I mean, I don't know how much it will matter in the long run, but they did focus on it, which was his very corporate slant.
Yeah.
And the way how much his philosophy is, sort of enmeshed in this super, super pro-corporate, anti-consumer, anti-democratic.
Anti-worker.
I found them to all be, you know, kind of remarkably well-spoken and, you know, they had really studied this guy. And I thought that was very, very interesting. I don't know how much that will, how much that will have an effect on what this guy does if he makes it onto the court. And
zero.
Yeah, I suspect he is going to make it onto the court. But nonetheless, it's in the records.
Well,
we know what we're getting into with that, and, you know, I maybe just not having any illusions is, you know, worth something. I don't know.
I found it encouraging because it one is a, I mean, I don't know how sincere it is, but it is, but I imagine it is. I mean, certainly from a guy like Whitehouse and from Franken, I mean, these are guys who've been on this theme for a while. And Klobuchar, I would say to a certain extent, they clearly, this is like, this is not something you hear that often in, you know, we didn't hear this with Alito. We didn't hear this really with Roberts. You know, we hear it, people like you and I talk about it, but you don't hear it in the context of those hearing rooms. It's usually sort of more like the hot button issues of abortion. And there was my understanding that White House got a lot of prep from like Demos. I mean the ascendancy of that issue set, I think, is really important because it transcends. They're not going to convince anybody. And I think the irony ultimately, I think that if the filibuster does hold, and it's encouraging to see Chuck Schumer, you know, get there first, because that provides a lot of oxygen for people between a guy like Schumer, let's say, and you know, even Whitehouse, but I mean, you know, to let's say Bernie Sanders. The thing that I think is going to make the filibuster stick, if it sticks, is going to be what Warren had said, which is, how can we actually allow a guy being investigated by the FBI to appoint a Supreme Court justice for 40 years? That's the one that's going to, like, Joe Manchin is going to be able to sort of say, like, I'm going to filibuster, if he does, right? I mean, and that's what's going to hold the filibuster. And if it happens, I mean, do you think it's a good idea? Because it's going to force McConnell, right, to either...
Yeah, I mean, look, you know, yeah, it'll force McConnell, but, you know, so what? Right. I mean, McConnell will blow up the filibuster when he needs to blow up the filibuster, and whether it's now or whether it's on the next one, I don't think it matters. He's going to do whatever he needs to do to get his, you know, zealots onto the court as the opportunity arises. So as far as I'm concerned, go ahead and let him do it now. I don't know what difference it makes. I cannot imagine that people are saying, well, you know, they'll make a deal that, you know, if they put him on the court this time, that he won't blow up the filibuster next time. Well, I'm sorry. You know, believing these Republicans on this kind of stuff is a fool's game. It's Lucy with the football. It's ridiculous. I mean, look, after what they did with Garland, there's absolutely no reason to trust them on Supreme. You know, they understand the importance of this, right? I mean, everybody understands the importance of the balance of the Supreme Court and what's going to happen. This was a unique opportunity to replace a hardcore conservative with someone less conservative. And unfortunately, that didn't go our way. And they are going to replace a hardcore conservative with someone who may even be worse
to the right
than Scalia. So, you know, that's where we're at. And I just think the Democrats, I think really at this point, everything depends upon them sticking together in the House and the Senate on all this stuff, not breaking, just putting up a wall of opposition and looking at 2018 and hoping against hope that we can create a wave election to turn the Congress to stop Donald Trump. I mean, I can't, there's nothing else that Democrats have at the moment except that. They don't have the power to actually do anything else, so they should exercise it to the absolute maximum, in my view.
Digby, we have what I think is some breaking news. I can't confirm this, but this is coming from a tweet by a Politico reporter. Let's play this first. My understanding is that Paul Ryan was on CNN announcing that it's over. They don't have the votes to gut health care for 24 million people, maybe what could have been 56 million by 2026. It's a sad day for people who really sadistically wanted to punish people for living in poverty or maybe even living living anywhere from 133 to 400% of poverty. So hang in there, folks. I'm sure there'll be another opportunity. Okay. And of course, not to mention the tax cuts for people who are making over $200,000. That's sad. But
of course.
But I'm sure they're going to get a second bite at that apple for the tax cuts. Sure. There's no doubt about that.
Oh, and, you know it. And they will. They will all fall in line for that one because that is what they really care about.
Right. Indeed. And they don't. There's no. This is a much more one-dimensional type of vote, right? Where it's cutting taxes, cutting the budget for the most part, is pretty straightforward for them. So,
yeah.
I mean, we'll see if that turns out to be the case, but I'm not terribly surprised.
No.
Donald Trump is already trying to make other news with Keystone. I'm sure tonight, what they'll do, there'll be something else that will. Will be distracting us by next Thursday. This is going to seem like it happened, in a different century.
And the problem is that I'm aging a year for every week that this goes on. I don't know if I'm going to make it, but every little step that happens here, if they were able to beat this back, I mean, and let's also keep that in mind, you know, the best thing that can happen is that they don't repeal Obamacare, okay? So, you know, and that's not saying that they're not going to do everything they can to destroy it from within, because they will, but if we can just keep it going, at least we'll have a basis for something to build on for the future. That's all we've got.
I don't know. I hope that assessment is right, and it's very hard for me to rationally say I would rather them repeal it than to sort of like slowly degrade it, because I think they can do a tremendous amount of damage to a lot of people
that
won't get nearly as much attention and will not have the political accountability and will undercut the ability. But at the same time, you know, that's a lot of suffering. So fortunately, I'm not in charge of any of that, and I don't have to make any decision that would in any way implicate that. So on to the next travesty of the Trump administration. Digby, always a pleasure. Thank you so much for taking the time.
Thanks for having me. I feel better, as I always do after I talk to you, Sam.
Well, I'm glad I could help.
That's a unique experience.
Yeah, exactly. I think you're the only person who says that to me, but I appreciate it. Bye, Digby.
Bye. Have a...
Oh.
Well, there you go.
Sam. Let her
Well, she said bye, and then
she was also going to wish you a good day as well.
Well, we'll see. We'll see how it goes.
It just is amazing to me because... 2011, right, was the year the grand bargain, and they're holding the debt ceiling hostage.
Mm-hmm.
And Obama goes over and offers a terrible, like, I'll make serious cuts in the social safety net for like some marginal tax increases. And the crazy people block that deal. This is the second time where like the maintenance of the social safety net has been protected inadvertently by people who are demanding much worse. It's just amazing to watch that play out.
Yes, and I wouldn't get too giddy about that because
I'm not.
The trend line is they're going to get there.
Yeah,
and that's the really scary part.
Well, if you don't start actually not electing them, they will eventually get there.
The trend line is that they're getting there. So we will see. All right. Do we have a Jimmy Reefer Cake song? Yep. Is it They Don't Have the Votes? That would be a good one.
It's called I Put My Faith in a Plant.
I put my faith. Oh, hold on for a second. Can we run? Ladies and gentlemen, I want you to text *1253 if you think this plant is a...
Now, I think it's marijuana. You tell me. Other folks think it's another plant. Text. I'm going to say it's marijuana. I think Jimmy Reefer Cake's doing an amazing job with that. I think it's ganja.
Let's hear the song as I call Isabel Gillies, ladies and gentlemen.
They said that the weed-hating Hillary Clinton could defeat any old Republican. But I told you she can't. I put my faith in a plant. Plus, everyone knows she's a liar. And she set the whole Democratic Party on fire. Now they put their faith in politicians again. I don't understand. I put my faith in a plant. Yeah, legalize weed and do it today. And you can grow weed like it's friggin' hay. And yet they wanna put their faith in politicians. They wanna do it again. I say, put your faith in a plant.
Who is that? Who is that?
That's man? Weezer.
Weezer, right, of course. I remember those guys.
Me too.
And in fact, well, I think it was probably around that time when Weezer was really happening that I met our next guest, ladies and gentlemen. And at that time, if you had asked me, would someday I ever introduce her with a song like this, I would have said, you're crazy.
Today is Casual Friday. Let us welcome Isabel Gillies to the show. She's going to recommend a movie or two to watch on Netflix. It's the only way I know. Listen to the picks from Isabel. IsabelGillies.com.
I mean, I never contemplated that when we first met that you would have a website. I never contemplated websites, I think, at that time.
Websites didn't even exist.
Did they? Or don't they? Didn't
no.
they?
No.
I don't know if websites. I don't know if websites existed in that way.
When did you meet?
Well, here's
we met in 1952.
No, seriously.
No,
early 90s.
But I was on a Labatt beer. I was the Labatt beer woman.
Oh, I knew that.
And guess what her name was?
Isabel.
Kelly.
Oh, it was Kelly. No.
It was, they did a campaign called Genuine, and then I forgot the guy's name. It was like there was a guy and a woman, and the woman's name, it was really the guy's name, and it like, let's say it was Ryan. And wait, you know what's crazy is that I can't hear myself. I'm on these new headphones.
Yeah.
I can't hear myself. What? Like,
are you okay?
I don't know. Do you want to like a Bluetooth thing. It's like okay. A Bluetooth.
All right.
Anyway, so you had to audition, and then they were auditioning in Los Angeles and in Chicago and New York and somewhere in the South. And I got the part, but Genuine Isabel was too, just didn't work. They didn't think that Isabel was a good name to have to be the Labatt beer girl. So they changed it to Kelly, Genuine Kelly. And I went to Canada and I was like a huge, it was everywhere in Canada that I was this Genuine Kelly and I was a Labatt person. But we had to do it, there were kiosks in sports huge centers, arenas. And they said, okay, you have to do, just say this, say www.labattbeer.com or something. And I was like, what does that mean? And they were like, it's just say it. It doesn't matter. It just say W. I was like, but what is WW? I don't understand. They're like, it's something called the internet. It's like a thing and don't worry about it. I was like, well, I don't know what that is. So I remember saying www.labattbeer, whatever.
Wait,
I have no doubt that we have Canadian listeners now who are crushed, who are just like, wait, Genuine Kelly was actually Isabel, and yeah. She doesn't even know what a sports big place is called?
Wait, so was the gist of
disingenuous
from Isabel to Kelly? What was the gist of it? Was it more like
Canadian
sluttier? It's
no,
beer.
It was,
come
no,
on,
no,
she's
no.
A beer, it's a beer gal.
It wasn't slutty. The whole thing was Genuine. The guy, I can't remember the guy's name. Genuine Jeff or something.
Brad.
And he was like, "Hey, I'm Jeff, and this is my house, and these are my real friends, and this is my real beer that I drink." Genuine, get it? So then the woman counterpart was, "Hi, we were on a big beach. I was like, these are my real friends, and I'm a real person. I'm Genuine Kelly." And so Kelly sounded like a more, maybe more sort of wide ranging name than Isabel.
I got to say, sad. I feel so disillusioned now. I mean, there's people out there. There are going to be, there's no doubt in my mind, we're going to have one Canadian listener at least who's going to be like, my life is now shattered.
And this is a time of a lot of institutional breakdown.
Yeah.
And it just sort of adds to this kind of general mistrust.
I don't know
why
you guys
listening
are so
to the
sad.
Show,
this
looking
is
at their Labatts, just going like, yeah. Never.
She's going to be, like, this is her life,
it's
and she's going to become such
no
a
F.
success and
I
be
can't
Kathy
enjoy
Stabler,
that again.
And it hasn't even happened yet. She hasn't even met you, Sam. Her life's great at
it was
this
all,
point.
It was all ahead of her at that point.
Yeah.
Now,
anyway, that was about the time that I met you, Sam.
That must have been like what? Or like early 90s, right? Like 94.
Early 90s.
Well, mid 90s. I would say probably 94, 95 probably we met.
Yep, that was it because I went to Los Angeles. We met a little bit before that, but we really hung out in Los Angeles.
Yeah.
When I was 25.
Oh my God. That was so long ago.
Woo!
I didn't think we talked.
Did we talk about politics even?
Did we talk about politics then? I mean,
a little bit, but not
a little bit.
We talked about TV.
Yeah. I mean, I don't remember every conversation we had. I mean, I remember them being great, but I just don't remember every conversation.
We were trying to get jobs. We were like young kids trying to get our careers together.
I think at that time I did a U.S. Open commercial spot.
That's very cool. Yeah. Who was playing? Do you remember?
Yes. In fact, I went on the court with what's his face? The German guy.
Boris Becker.
Becker.
Boris
it was Becker
really,
versus Agassi.
That's a great
and
match.
And I was on the court.
That's such
for
a good match.
The semifinal with Becker. Like literally ran out on the court in between
On a changeover?
Not even a changeover.
They like let they interrupt the game for an ad?
I didn't interrupt the game. I stood right on the court right before he served.
Like by the ball boys?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
What?
Yeah. That's obnoxious.
It was really obnoxious. Yeah, but the guy didn't care. CBS. It was. They didn't care. And it was.
Did you watch the match at all, though? I mean, that's a really good match.
Of course.
And you know what's a really good book, by the way? Open.
It's such
Andre
a good book.
Agassi's
that is
memoir.
An amazing book.
I got to read that. And aren't you? Now. I feel like you're friends with Agassi. No?
That's me.
Oh.
Did you find it?
Yeah. We found the Labatt's beer commercial. We're running it right now. Holy cow. Look at this.
Can I see it if I go onto my computer?
Yeah. How did you know it was you?
I mean.
Oh, you heard it.
Because I heard it.
Oh, okay. Yeah. If you go onto your computer, you will see it. Are you on your computer yet or no?
Yeah, yeah. I just thought that I had to turn it off to be on the thing.
No. All right. You ready?
Wait, hold on. This is so funny.
All right. So you can listen.
The world is so strange.
Turn down the sound on the computer.
Turn down the sound.
Yeah. Okay. And just watch. Are you ready?
Okay.
And
I have to watch an ad first. I have to watch an ad first.
All right. There we go, everybody.
Hold on. Hi. Hold on. I'm Kelly, and
hello.
This is my beer commercial. Roll sound. Action. My beer, the Bad Ginger Draft. The cast, those are my friends. This is Mike. Okay, cue the announcer.
Well, Bad Genuine Draft goes down easy because it's real draft.
Hello. It's weird, huh?
A woman talking in a beer commercial?
Okay, that's
rap. That's the most 1990s thing I've ever seen in my life.
That was so MTV.
That's the way it worked.
I'm so jealous. That's like the coolest.
Man,
she had a 90s, super 90s outfit. So cool.
Isn't it cool? It was,
yeah.
Totally
retro.
That's stunning.
It's totally retro.
That's crazy. It's not slutty. Kelly?
No, I get it now.
It was party. It was party girl.
Party.
Wait, who
I was,
said
and
it
then,
was slut?
And then I was like, I all in the, you know, I was like a beer girl.
Wow,
I need
that's
so
awesome.
Much money
I mean,
that
you must
too.
Have beat out a lot of people. You're so successful.
What? No, it was the first time I ever made money. Like,
I bet, yeah.
So much money. But it was enough money that I was like, oh, wait a minute. I could do this. I could live. I can eat. I can, you know, for a while.
Do you think you beat out any real Canadians though? And do you feel weird about that?
I did beat out real Canadians.
Oh,
I know
oh
I did.
Oh boy, that's tough.
Eesh. How do you feel?
You think that's bad?
No, I just want to know
no,
how you feel.
Shut up,
how
Michael.
You feel.
Yeah, Michael. Clam it up. Clam it up, Michael. Do you
now
know what's happening
for,
in my life? Can I just tell you guys something?
Yes, please.
My husband is the kind of person who likes, if there's something happening in the world, he wants to find out about it. You know, he's a reporter, like try
right.
it out. You know, if there's like a new anything. So we got an Alexa.
Oh, right. Wait a second. I want to put a pin in this because I saw you tweet about it. But let me just play the U.S. Open ad. It starts at 127, I think. 127 on this. There's
oh, my God. This is such a fine oh thing. God, it's both of our oh, early careers.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So, 1990.
It had to come down to this?
Yeah. It's on the right.
The men's final, the U.S. Open.
Now you know why they call it the world's toughest tennis.
This is Pete Sampras. Yesterday, he beat Jim Courier.
This is Andre Agassi. Yesterday, he beat Boris Becker.
Sampras.
Agassi.
Today, watch the men's final of the U.S. Open Tennis Championship.
Today, it's on CBS.
Now, of course, this wasn't going to
leave. They should have hit you with the ball.
I know.
Get
Sam,
off of the court.
So weird there. You could have been Ross, I think, on Friends.
That's my whole career. That was my whole career. I got, after Friends got big, the next year is when I got booked on all the sitcoms.
Oh, that makes sense.
And was literally down the street from them at Warner Brothers Studio.
You're cooler now. I'm sorry, but
who
that
was
not cool.
Who was the other guy?
I don't remember.
Oh, you didn't remember the other dude?
No, that was a long time ago.
He was also very nice.
And I still have that shirt. There you go. I just got rid of that shirt like a year ago. Here we go.
The U.S. Open Tennis Championship.
It's the world's toughest tennis.
It's on CBS.
Michael Jordan came back.
It can be done.
She was the best, and she's still only 21.
I just got rid of that T-shirt.
The world's toughest tennis. The U.S. Open. It's on CBS.
Sanchez Vicario. She's got grit, like a little spitball. She's like a rocket. It's the U.S. Open on CBS.
It's the world's toughest tennis.
Arantxa Sanchez Vicario, man, she's so tenacious, she's gritty, she's a defending champ, and she wears it all on her sleeve.
Kinda like your lunch.
He just won Wimbledon.
Mm-hmm. He's ranked number one.
I mean, my guy's game is the most complete in the world.
Oh,
my guy is taking
shirt.
His game to the next level.
Have you ever seen Pete Sampras' serve?
Have you ever seen Andre Agassi's return of serve?
No. To win at the U.S. Open, you have to be in total control.
You have to be out of control.
The U.S. Open. It's the world's toughest tennis. Yeah.
Okay.
I liked how they went. Yeah. You look like you would be the Sampras guy, and he looks like he'd be the Agassi mm-hmm. guy. And I like how they played
yep.
against type there.
Yep.
Very clever.
Oh, my God. Isabel's commercial was so much cooler.
That was
disgraceful.
Oh, yeah. Well, I look, the check cleared. Let me put it that way. And it was tennis. So I felt, you know, I don't know.
I love Marin's face every time you're loading up one of those
he's just
segments.
Like,
he's always just like, here we go.
Can't believe it. Yeah, that was on...
All right. So wait. So you got to know.
I know you were.
What? Go ahead.
I was slinging beer. That's like you were, you know, promoting athleticism and games, and I'm like partying in Toronto.
Sometime I'll dig up the industrial I did for Prudential Insurance, where I'm literally wearing a foam rock and walking around. And I remember that gig. It was my first gig.
And then you could.
I made $250 bucks, and I was like, "Oh my god!"
Diaper commercial.
What's that? Your diaper commercial? I did it.
I love diapers.
Oh wow! Whoa, that's a big payday.
It ran for 2 years.
Oh my gosh. That's huge bucks.
Money.
All right. Well.
Yeah. They ready for
so
this?
Successful.
Here's the tagline. They ready? They hold like the Hoover Dam.
Oh my god. Jesus.
What if there had been somebody like a that, Hoover Dam incident?
Somebody should get that kid checked out. Isabel. Tell me about this Alexa, because I've been, you know, Mila's been begging me to get one, and I'm like, no possible way. Am I bringing that
that's
into the house?
That's what I said.
And
that's what I said. I was like, no way. But I lost. And the it's like a tube. It's like a tall stick. And you say, so what's driving me crazy about is that you say, Alexa, what's the weather today, please? And that's how I would ask. But really, you could just say, Alexa, what's the weather? But what I don't like in my house is hearing everybody asking this thing to do things without saying please and thank you.
Well, all right.
It's driving me crazy. And you can say, but what's fun is that, so there were some electricians here yesterday because we had some electrical stuff that we couldn't figure out, and they came. And then so you say, okay, hey guys, let's see if they can do, if Alexa can figure out. So the electricians are like, Alexa, how many watts, how many volts of wattage, da, 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 and like asking them really hard electrical questions.
Yeah.
and then you can say, Alexa, play Let It Be. And she's like, okay, here you go. And then when I find myself in times of trouble, I mean, it's kind of amazing. I could say, Alexa, can you set a timer for 15 minutes? And she's like, okay, a timer is setting now for 15 minutes. But what's happening is it's turning into that movie with River Phoenix. No, sorry. With Joaquin Phoenix.
Right. Gladiator?
With Siri. No, when he falls in love with Siri.
Oh, right. Yes.
Gladiator.
So, no, it was...
No.
I know what one you're talking about.
Her.
Yeah. Yeah, what's the name of that movie?
Her.
Oh, Her.
That's the name
of it.
Yeah. And so last night we're sitting, or the other night we're sitting at the table for dinner, and I actually had, she's, Alexa's around the corner, and I actually had this feeling that we should not leave her around the corner.
While
like
you're eating?
Rude.
While you're eating?
Yeah, like maybe we should move her so that she'd feel left out or something. Mm.
Things okay with you, Isabel, or?
No. But that's the thing, is that she talks to you. When anything starts talking to you, you empathize, or you put some kind of anthropomorphize it, you know, and you start to feel for it. So I feel badly if someone asks her in an impolite way. I feel badly if I leave the room. I'm sort of like, bye. You know?
And what does Alexa say?
Well, Alexa doesn't say anything because Alexa's a machine. But,
well, but if you say bye, Alexa, does it say, what would you like me
to buy?
Oh, it says
nope,
goodbye.
Just say goodbye. If you say,
can you change it?
Morning,
can you change her name? Can you call her something else?
I don't think so. I think it's Alexa.
Mm.
And because apparently there was an article that people who actually have someone in their household named Alexa, it's messing up. But this morning, Peter left and said, bye, Alexa, bye. And she said, bye. Have a good day.
That is a little bit creepy.
It is creepy.
That's
it's
our future,
weird.
Though, right? I mean, that's our future. I mean, it's
that's.
I used to when Mila was acting up, I used to pretend that Siri was my other daughter, Evelyn, and that I liked her better. And it was the best way to get her out of like when she was just having a fit. I would just say like,
excuse me, I'm going to talk to your sister, Evelyn. And I would just go, you're my favorite daughter, to Siri. And Siri would be like, I don't understand what you're saying. And I'm like, Evelyn, don't say that just for Mila's sake. And then that would like shake her out of her tantrum. And then, of course, now Mila's completely addicted to her phone. So I wouldn't do that, folks. That's the thing about Alexa. I just sort of feel like you're, you know, but on one hand, all this technology, there's a certain inevitability, right? Like our kids, you know.
That's why with the phones of the teenagers in the household, you know, there's a certain school that's like, oh, well, here we go. This is where it's going. And that's true. But there was that good article in the Times that said, no, you actually have to, especially with teenagers who have no ability to stop themselves from anything.
Yeah.
With the phone, they really can't stop. But so you have to restrict, you have to make rules and boundaries and take their phones. And I mean, they won't give you, you're like, can you please give me the phone? And they're like, no. And they, you know, they hold, it's like a pipe, a crack pipe.
Right.
They're giving you the phone. And you have to lock it them up, and they're really manipulative and good. They're like, let me just check because I have a string of Snapchat.
Here's the issue with the phone now. It's like, you know, we gave it to Mila at first because, you know, she was walking to school and, you know, walking 20 minutes from home. And, you know, I'm a little concerned about that. I want to make sure I know where she is. I should have given her a flip phone is really, in retrospect,
right.
What I realized
That's
I should have
right.
done. And
that's right.
I mean, but she had saved all her money and I was like, she's like, I want, you know, an iPhone 5 or whatever it was. And I'm like, yeah, good luck. And, then she took every dollar that she had made from selling, duct tape wallets and that she'd gotten as like, you know, for birthday or whatever it was and came and put $200 on my desk. And I was like,
yeah,
I guess I told All her right. to save up money for something she wants, and this is what she wants, and now it's completely out of control. And the thing is this, though, is that, like, it genuinely is a huge part of their social life. So it's not just, like, you know, I'm going to be able to say to her, like, okay, now you can't communicate with your friends. Your friends' whole lives, you know. You know, everybody, I mean, the one time you have that
Sam,
FOMO is during junior high, right? Like, I'm missing out. All my friends are doing something. And it's actually true. They are all doing something. And
yeah. And she's watching it. The kids are watching them do it. And but here's the thing. You know, my father, I remember once I was in the middle of a big conversation with this girl and we were in like a fight, a middle school fight, and, you know, having a complex situation. And my father was like, Isabel, get off the phone. And I was like, no, Dad, I'm, you know, hold on, you know what? And then suddenly I just hear, tuck. And he just hung up because I had the phone in my bedroom and the cord was going all the way around into the kitchen. And he was just like, hang up, you know, because I wouldn't have never gotten off that phone call. I just, you know, because you have to stop them at some point. And if they have FOMO, well, you know, you just have to deal with the FOMO.
Yeah, I know. I mean, now I think we just send Mila to camp just so that she can't use her phone.
I know.
Basically what it's come down to. Yeah. I mean, I used to have a device on her phone where I could remotely shut it down. And schedule it. And but that becomes then difficult because the updates break it. And then I've got like another job, like literally a part-time job, which is to police these phones. And I don't know. I mean, you know, like I remember my parents saying like, don't sit in front of that TV all day. You're wasting, you're frying your brain. Well, it turns out that all that TV watching was basically what made me have a career. I was able to make more money than at times, like many times than they were making, significantly more than my parents were making and made in years because of television. And then it was like, you know, so you, why wouldn't you? I mean, it's hard to say. I mean, who knows?
Because also exercising is really good for you, and you have to go do that. I mean, you just have to, it's everything in moderation.
Well, that's the thing, is that her grades are great. She goes and she's, you know, she plays basketball. She's doing all the things I want her to do. It's just that she also happens to walk around with, like, this appendage. And the other problem is I'm on my phone all the time too. Now, I mean, it's like
I get,
I'm constantly getting texts about, you know, Paul Manafort story about, you know, like it's constant.
To me, the weird, one of the weird things about Myla and people her age, the situation with the phones, is that when things happen and they happen more publicly, or at least. I mean, things seemed very public in middle school and high school, but nobody knew about them. Like, my parents didn't know about, like, the embarrassing, like, inner fighting of social circles and whatever was happening. Now it's like...
I don't think that's just a function of social media. I think that's also a function of, like, a change in relationships between...
In parenting?
Yes. I definitely think
it's
that.
I mean, my parents tried really hard, but I was like, get away from me. I hate you. You're the worst. But they weren't.
And I also
think that's not how kids are now. It really, the kids are much more connected to their parents. They still want you to get away from them, but they'll say things like, I'm going to go, you know, probably go to a party. Will there be some sexual activity and pot smoking? And I'll do my best not to do that. But then we have a code that, so if I get in a weird situation, I can text you and you'll come pick me up. And I mean, it's much more fluid, and they are so fluidly talking about their sexuality and their who they are and their also their neurological landscape. So, you know, well, with my tendency towards OCD, they're just so dexterous with all the different
things.
Part of
that is also, part of that I think is New York. I mean, it's hard for me to separate, like, you know. But my experience with, you know, growing up in Worcester and having friends in New York is that they were much more comfortable talking to adults than I was. That they just, you know, I mean, part of it is, you know, you live in an apartment building, you know, you're it's much more communal in some respects.
Well, I grew up in a smaller type of situation with the going to Catholic school. So, I mean,
with your awesome father.
It was just a smaller group. So talking to adults, I don't know if that was the issue. I was just an incredible brat. Maybe that was part of
my child's brat.
Well, I didn't feel, I don't know. Yeah, I can see how the neurological thing, and I never would have said anything about sex to my parents. I cannot imagine. When I was that age, oh my gosh.
Well, I read a book. Go ahead.
The kids talk about sex so much. I mean, like sexuality and sex and I mean, there's no difference in what they talk about with their friends and me. I think. I mean, probably that's not quite true, but
right. I would hope it's a little bit.
Definitely
I mean,
not
when
quite
I
true.
Was when I was young in high school, there was my dad, they knew I was drinking and stuff like that, and it was like I can call my dad and he'll come get us and drop us all off, and I won't be in trouble. Was eventually the rule, like, you know, no one drink and drive, whatever. But that was kind of about as far as it got. Everything else I got in trouble for.
I think Myla's fairly open with me, and part of that makes I had the talk with her, you know, based upon a book I read. At like age 6, and just laid it all out, and she was, you know, she was like, okay, that's enough. at age 6,
I always lay it all out for them. I'm always like, all right. And one time I drew a diagram, like when they were really young, I wanted them to get cleaning their bodies down, and so I drew a picture of the steam in the shower of pores. I was like, look,
what?
The pores are like these little divots, and all this dirt can get in there, and then it can smell, or it can turn into a blackhead, or it can. And my parents never did that, and I always felt a little bit in the dark about
your pores?
How to deal with my body, like pores and smells and all that kind of stuff.
No, she's right. BO on adolescence, they don't understand that it's going to.
Oh my god!
So drawing a diagram of pores
change. Yeah, that sounds a little bit like I would have been like, "What are you talking about?" Like, but it's true. Like hormones are going to change kids, and they don't understand.
That's old mom talking about the trees, forgetting about the forest. I mean, let's just do the body, mom, not the pores.
Well, I mean, you just.
she's talking about pores and making sure that you don't smell, and you're telling Mila about everything about sex when she's six. It's all fine. What's fine?
And pores just seem a little bit micro.
Here's how intercourse works, sweetheart. Oh, you're going to interrupt me? Maybe I'll talk to my favorite daughter instead.
I'll tell you something. The hormone situation is the most fascinating thing of humanity I've ever seen. Watching people go through puberty, maybe broken record, is so much better than watching people learn to walk and stuff like that. Like when people are like, oh my God, my baby just learned to walk. I'm like, oh, well,
right.
Yeah, I guess. Puberty, I was like, what the heck? It was the craziest thing watching these people change in front of your eyes in 3 months. They grow like 10 inches and hair and voice and the whole thing and like what they want and what they eat and what they sleep. Suddenly they sleep like you wake them up. I woke up Thomas this morning. He's 12, but he's all in there. And it was like this. Like the sleep was so deep that I had to like pull three or four times. I was like, come on, you can do it. He's like, oh, no. I was like, you can get to the awake part of the day. Come on. You know, he's 12. He's sleeping so hard.
How late does he
he's
stay
growing.
Up? How late is he staying up now?
No, he could be. They go to sleep early. He could sleep for 15 hours.
Wow.
It's just they're growing like crazy, so their bodies need to sleep. And my father always said, never ever wake up a sleeping teenager. No good can come to it.
Right. Well,
like, just let that lie. In case you have to go somewhere, I guess, but. And if they don't have anything else to do, just let them sleep.
So, all right. So, Isabel, let's do this. What have we got for a musical celebration? Now that we've done our rundown of the kids, I'm just drawing
musical?
Some chords. Not musical. Our cinematic.
Are you asking me this thing?
Would
that
you?
What's happening?
Let's hear just
a little bit of singing. No, it's okay. I am so pleased with what I'm going to recommend, although I'm haunted by a tweet that someone said that last week Matthew Film Guy was so good that I better do good this week.
Ooh,
which
all right.
is intimidating. I didn't think it was very necessary, but to threaten me like that. But okay. So all of us are consumed and worried all the time.
Right.
And I was thinking, I've been spending the last couple of months maybe being like, you know what? I'm just going to watch Great British Bake Show because it's familiar to me and I can't deal with anything else. I'm only going to watch things that make me just sort of sedated, because I wake up in the morning and I go to get the stuff ready and turn on the radio. And in 10 minutes, I'm like, oh my God, the environment, it's every day. It's something so drastic and dramatic that I was like, I just need to sedate myself with something familiar, like old episodes of Sex and the City or, whatever. But things have changed in my approach. Mm. And so I remember when I was getting a divorce and very sad, someone said to me that the antidote, what is it when antidote to tragedy or something really terrible happening is learning. And so when they said that to me, I was like, okay. And I happened to be living on a college campus, so I just went to any free lecture I could go to about anything. Mm. I just go, because I was like, learning is going to help me get through this hard time. So with that in mind, I went and documentaries are always good, because you can learn another process, another experience, something all that's amazing going on around the globe. And I found this series called Abstract, The Art of Design. And I have an art background.
Yep.
And it's a series on Netflix about all different designers and people who are like architects and stage designers and the guy that made Nike sneakers. And the first one is this illustrator named a German illustrator named Christoph Niemann, and he has 23 New Yorker covers. And it goes just as a, you know, about a 45 minute deep dive into his life and how he thinks about art and how he thinks about creating and how he, his perspectives and how he learned to be an artist. And, he had a big teacher that was, in art school that was the illustrator of Yellow Submarine Beatles cover, who was really, really harsh. And it's just so interesting. And it, what happened when I was watching it is that what that person told me 15 years ago, that learning really helps you out if you're worried and troubled, was actually happening. I was starting to feel better and I was starting to feel like, wait a minute, there's, you know, you can make something, you can do, be active, you can go and change something, because we as people are amazing and we have power, and even in a pencil there's power. And it, I found it very sort of very, very not inspirational, but just like, right, here we go. Let's
empowering.
Like, snap out of it. Empowering. Yeah, I was like, let's go. You know, one thing this guy said, this illustrator Niemann said, he's also so amusing, and it's so fun to watch, because you're like, oh, look, it's like, it would be great with Myla or a kid or someone, anybody who's growing, which is all of us, right? It's always helpful to watch, even if you're a, you know, no, doesn't matter what you do, to watch someone else's process informs whatever right. you do in such a fun way. So he said that somebody else really great and famous, I can't remember. Oh, Jim Dine, who's a wonderful painter. Chuck Close. It was Chuck Close. He said, Chuck Close did all those huge faces, and everybody know who Chuck Close is. He actually has a subway station, the New York City Q line on the Second Avenue subway. He has lots of huge mosaics in there. Okay. But he said inspiration is kind of BS, and what works, what artists and people who do what we do works, is just sitting down every day and doing it. That's where the art comes from. And I love that too, because it's like people sit around and wait to be inspired. Well, you're not, you know, you might be inspired, you might not be, but if you just get to work, you're going to really find out, you know, what's in you. So I really recommend it for everybody, because it's on Netflix and it's very well produced, and it no matter what you do or who you are, it will inform you and make you look forward and
abstract.
Put one foot in front of the other.
Abstract.
Yeah. It's abstract. What did I say?
That's what you said.
Yeah.
Abstract.
Abstract. Abstract.
I'm just repeating
original.
It twice. I'm excited to try and get Myla to start watching it with me.
It's so good. And it's, the first one's 47 minutes, the second one's 42 minutes, so it's not, you know, enormous amount of
right.
like, time commitment, but it really opens you, and it's just, there's so many people in the world that are so incredible, you know, there's just, everyone have these huge reservoirs of knowledge, and these people are put it out there, and it's just, why not watch it? I love it.
I love it. Isabel? I'm going to watch it. I'm going to let you know if I can get Myla out of her phone to do it.
Yeah, take your phone. I'm taking your phone away for 50 minutes.
You can't do that, Dad. Oh, my God, no.
Yeah.
Oh, my God, no.
Yeah.
Oh, my God, no.
And then,
no.
You know what you do?
No. I'll just hold it. I'll just hold it.
You turn off her data router.
I'll just hold it. No, I can't. Oh, God, no. Oh, no. Oh, God, no. Oh, God, no. All right.
Watch art.
All right. I will tell her to do that. I hope she someday gets that impression of her that I just did. Isabel, always a pleasure. Thank you so much.
The pleasure is mine, as always. Everybody, goodbye. I'm sorry that everything's bad.
Well, it's not your fault. I mean, maybe if you'd done that Kelly thing just a slightly different.
The world would have turned out.
Oh, no. I hold what you did to the U.S. Open much more responsible for our
present
state
of affairs.
It's quite possible.
Who knows?
Yeah, that beer ad was fine. U.S. Open, that was messed up.
Bye, Isabel.
Bye, Isabel.
Bye, guys.
Bye.
Bye.
There it is, ladies and gentlemen. Isabel Gillies. Folks, we're going to head into the
Fun half. Longy today. Longy, no shorty.
It's better when you put a fun name on it.
But,
longy.
It's a longy half. This is another time where I did something and we showed it and Marin looked unhappy. Let's take time. Fun. Every single time you load up a clip on the, and I haven't watched much Break Room Live, so primarily we watch it when I've seen it when we're using it for something, and you're always, it's, you're at the kitchen. And
well, we used to do them in the break room.
Yeah, no, I understand. You're in the break room and you're sitting there and you have like this like spiffy little smirk, like, here was another enterprise in my acting career. And Barrett is just like, oh my God, I'm in a break room. What's happening?
Oh,
okay,
yeah,
here's another moment of Sam's career.
He just did not like it when I would talk.
No, I mean, that is all for me.
And that fed me and actually probably made me the most energetic I've ever been in any context, because I could hear him like huffing and puffing next to me. Like,
see, that's what makes me
and
disturbed.
That would, I could feel that. And so I would like fix my gaze forward more.
Yes.
And
yes,
just like try and just slightly. I felt like there was a level of enthusiasm that I could project that the audience would not be able to read, but would slide over if I projected enough enthusiasm, some of it would come over and just keep
and that's
Marin
literally
in the side of
all
his head.
I'm seeing. That's
and
all I see. When
I would
we play
get
those
people.
Clips.
People would IM us, and I think there was something like Bush and Chains. I think was and there's more. Would IM us, and there were some people who would just create aliases just to torment Marin. And it was really funny.
Oh, my God.
All right, folks.
What a great team.
It was a lot of fun. And I sure showed him.
Yeah.
Stuck in a garage. Anyways. You can become a member of this program by becoming a member of this program by going to jointhemajorityreport.com. Also, justcoffee.coop, fair trade coffee, tea, or chocolate. Use the coupon code MAJORITY, get 10% off. Also, if you buy crap from Amazon, if you buy it from Jet, do it at our link page at majorityreportkickback.com. You click on those links, you bookmark them, you use that as your Jet or Amazon gateway. You will notice no difference, but we get a kickback. Also, take a moment, go to your iTunes, leave us a review. That always helps. Monday, Michael will be here, and I will be here in the fun half in just 60 seconds. 646-257-3920. Have a good weekend if you are leaving us now.